I talked to several of you during the break, and I wonder if people have comments or questions are fine. Some of your comments at the break were wonderful, and I'd love it if you'd share with the other staff.
The whole ritual, the whole thing is so beautiful. It gives us the hope of what could happen, or whatever to happen when the time comes for my husband or myself or whatever. But I just wondered I know Chuck somewhat, but was he resistant at all to sharing? Because sometimes men, you could approach them with this and they wouldn't, wouldn't want to. My dad, when he found out he was dying, left.
And when we were on the family, he was when he heard the goal, but some men are just cut off from feeling what they need to feel. Do you think going to that ritual would still be beneficial? So they could hear from others, even though they, you know, or was that before seeing them in those situations that can cope with, or what do you think? Well, it wasn't anything that was just from them. I mean, I think that working with Jimmy helped, and writing. We'd gone on a marriage encounter years before and had done some of that kind of talking and sharing. But he was a big old tough Irishman too, and and he had trouble getting in touch with his feelings, and he had trouble with tears. But at the end, I mean, it was through that ritual, and at the very end, Jenny did say to him, "How was that for you, Chuck? What did that? What meaning did that have for you?" And you know, he said, "Well, I hate to cry in front of people," but he did, And I know during that end phase, he cried more and more when he asked people to be a part of his funeral. And this is another thing, I didn't talk about this, but a lot of you in the room were a part of planning his funeral and with him. Which some of you said was a kind of tough experience to sit in the room with the person you're planning the funeral for. But that way, I mean, he got to, his funeral really was him, because we talked about what he would like, what policy would like. Gail and Tom came over and were part of talking about the music and did the music for him. Carolyn did the environment table, and Alice and Mary were there, planning, probably leaving people off that were there. But just to give input and ideas of what would really be a celebration of life instead of just the same old tired rituals that sometimes some of us feel we have when we're at liturgy anymore. And so I think we wanted it to be more than that. So we did do a lot of talking. So it probably was, through steps. I don't think it's something you could just jump into without
the
thought.
If someone had like a quick prognosis thing, then what would you
expect? Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they were gone, sick and gone, or really, really sick where they didn't have kind of the time to do it in a sense.
You know, I think Jenny with, Joby can probably talk to that, though, because...
I think it depends on the man, and it's not just men that are in denial. I've had female patients who were so frightened they simply would not talk about it. So you have to get a feel for who the person is, not just men.
But, I do think, we're all getting, this is kind of an aging... and I think to myself, my gosh, I was so willing to do this for Chuck. But I haven't, done any of the preparation. I've been working with Jenny and we're planning her funeral. She is not sick. But, and we were talking to her kids this last week, and she said, the daughter said, in 20 years when you die. And, Jenny's 82 and it might be 20 years because she's in really good shape. But, we plan so many other things in our lives. Why don't we plan what this is and what the statement is we want to say about our life is and what God has meant to us in our lives? Because that can really be a spiritual statement about who we are. So, I've encouraged to get Kathy, thanks for saying that, because I have thought I should be doing this with my kids, or at least you know, doing some preparation. But Jenny's doing the whole thing of what it is she wants and where she wants it and how she wants it to be. And, yeah. It is.
Yeah. We have a Japanese daughter-in-law that you probably all saw in the newsletter that had ovarian cancer and spread, and she's almost 41 years old. But she is still active with over two children. And the culture is such that you really have to kind of stop with this, find out what her feelings are. So it's an interesting process that we're going through because she has tremendous hope and she's taking lots of things and doing alternatives and along with medical. But I have this concern inside that we're all going to go along like this and all of a sudden she's gone and yet there's been no talk or preparation. And yet we're very close and yet it's a hard thing for me to bring this up and yet still have hope.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have
anything to say? Yeah, that? Mm-hmm. It is that. And yes, Christine, have you had
anything? Maybe you can just talk to her about today. What you heard today.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, from sideways, which is a very Asian way to do it.
We do that, except my concern is preparation as far as what happens to, you know, her children and you know, a lot of things need to be discussed, and I feel like you can't really realistically just let that go.
Yeah. Children, I think, rise to the occasion much more than we do. If there's a way, maybe there's just a way just the two of you to talk and ask her how she feels about that. But it is a prognosis that she won't make it through this?
Well, I don't know that anyone said it to her, but it should be said to us.
It's terrible not to be.
Yeah, I would say the greatest gift you could give her is to help her in this preparation. And also, I think what happened with us was, not that we didn't have to grieve afterwards, I mean, that's you still have to do that, but it starts this process of beginning the grieving. And allowing people to say, I mean, I remember when after my father died and my sister cried over his coffin saying, I never got to say goodbye to him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think there is that need to say goodbye that if we can do it, it's perfect, yeah.
I think one thing with someone that, you know, I had a mother that we ended in the process and worked with Jenny, so it's such a different feeling when you can talk about it and you're entering into it,
yeah.
And the family knows, so it's very different.
Okay, at the back.
I just want to say something for the state of denial. You know, I think it's a really needed thing and it needs to be valued because if the person is in that much denial, they need it. And they've probably been told. It's probably been told. If you have to take the door down very carefully, the door of denial. Very,
very mm-hmm.
She needs that. It gets her through, you know.
Yeah, certainly it all has to be done with love and concern and compassion.
Yeah.
Okay, Jim?
I think, you know, a lot of times the person who is sick and dying is afraid to talk about what they want out of fear that they're going to scare their kids or
make them uncomfortable.
Their loved ones. And I think you have to, again, judge who the person is.
Yeah.
And if you bring up like what we were talking about today and they respond positively to that, then they're giving you the go-ahead. They want to talk about it. And if they shut you down, then probably denial is probably better to respect their process and let them be in denial. I don't think it's fair to force on them what you want them to be.
Right.
You want them to be who they are.
You do.
How many of you remember Jenny's husband, Jim? I went to see him about a week or two before he died, and the reason I'm sharing this with you, it shows you the end point that people can reach. He was in the back room. He had lost a lot of weight. His hair was gone. He was very thin. And he looked up at me and smiled. He said, I got my bags packed. I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
Well, that's the end point.
Yeah. And I think probably just offering the opportunity to someone. I mean, I agree with you about denial. Some people just could not go there. And but others, it is the protection of us that they don't want to bring that up. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it also depends on, like my father had talked to me about God, but no way could he have talked to my
other. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he definitely died before my brother arrived on COVID. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just depends on the individual.
I know we've been in a group for years that started because of one friend dying of a rare form of liver cancer, and we meet monthly and talk. And when Chuck was diagnosed and saying, you know, get your affairs in order, and this group we've been with for so many years and shared our lives with couldn't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it wasn't until we kind of opened the door and gave them permission mm-hmm. that we went through kind of an evening of talking about what this meant to them. And so I think there is some of that, of helping to create that opportunity if the person feels secure with it. Mm-hmm. Christine?
Well, I remember the first time I went down to Congress. It was 3 years ago, and there was Chuck in his wheelchair, with lots of gentlemen over there. I thought, he's not going to let a bit of life get away from him. And then I thought the timing of his death was so beautiful because, you know, that the chair out there was his baby, and Thomas Reese appeared. And we sat behind him in his wheelchair, and we've been praying heartily for months. And I was very surprised to see he was upright and everything, that
yeah.
he was really fully participating. And then what was it, 6 days later or something that
mm-hmm.
he died?
Yeah.
5 days later? Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, he saw the baby born, and he was the first speaker. And that was wonderful that he was able to participate right up to the last.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. I was going to say, even in denial, people have things in their mind. They have to have things in their mind. But it is just breaking that door down and talking. You know, I don't know how to do it, but they have things in their mind that they're questioning and want to get done, so they just don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, Tom.
Well, for the childbirth process, some cultures have a special person called a doula or something, doulos or something, who kind of helps. You know, the process. Do we have anybody that helps in the death process? Do, are there people?
Hospice, but not.
Yeah.
But I kind of thought that's what that group was that we did with Chuck, that you were a part mm-hmm. of, that we met probably two, maybe three times, and, you know, to kind of, I don't know that we talked about the service. But, you know, it was a bit of that, I mean, to kind of talk about going the one step further, that this is going to be what happens. Let's experience it a little bit while you're still here. One other thing I want to say about Tom and Gail, St. Patrick's Day, Chuck loved his Irish heritage, and you guys were getting ready to do I always call them restaurants, they're not, what do you call them now? Anyway, they came over and practiced, Gail with their accordion and Tom with his guitar, singing Irish songs and serenaded Chuck for about an hour. I mean, that's helping us along the way, I think, of, you know, giving pleasure. Yeah, Kathy.
There's already, like, two other resources I just wanted to mention. Somebody I know does, like, videography.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it kind of brought my mother out. She was like 88 and kind of had a really bad pneumonia, barely pulled through. And I started like going through her life. There was a book that I found that had, you know, asking her about her childhood and about her best friend when she was a kid and her memories. And it really revived her. I mean, it was therapeutic, but also gave us, you know, something to down the road hang on to with these things I'd never talked to her about. And so, I mean, that's another thing, if you somebody's really ill, to just, you know, let them kind of and there you are, and, you know, they can share and say things, and it can be very, very great for the family. And,
I want to thank you also for your honesty and your, you know, just touching into your soul and into our soul, especially when you could say to us, I just don't know where Chuck is, I don't know where God is, and then to bring it into the whole idea of being a part of the universe. I do think that's something we need to deal with right now. Personally, where are we and how do we fit in? And how the whole question that you have, we need to start talking about it, but dealing with it inside, not being afraid to talk about that. I think
Yeah, that's certainly coming up at this retreat this week with Barbara Marks Hubbard. You know, with this whole new universe story and the cosmology that she has and a whole different philosophy that doesn't really, isn't part of it, but it's just another way of thinking and knowing that, you know, one of the awarenesses from all of that is that, you know, Chuck really is here. Alice, you used to say, well, thinly veiled, you know, but through this study, you know, it just seems like he's more present because, and the connection with Barbara, I suppose, but I think there's so many things that we thought we had answers to that for me aren't answers anymore, that don't ring true, that I think I need to rethink, and I don't have the answers, but I sure like the dialogue. And some of the things that the studies, the questions is bringing up. Yeah, Georgia.
One of the things that I recall when my son died 7 years old, was actually when he died, the grieving that I was feeling and the loss. And I remember I too got into the anger and, you know, with God. And I remember where I began to, something came to my mind about the spider that who, you know, they make their leave their web. And it is that type of tissue that I was connected to him. That cleared me out. That really did it for me. And to this day. And then about 5 years later, there was an item in a paper about just that. I kept it to this day. That thing that really sort of healed me when I knew that there was a connection between him and I.
That web.
That web, yes. And there are strong tissues that they make.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank you, too, for the ritual. I think that's the most impressive. And what's happening to me right now is my mother died 11 years ago. She knew she was dying because she refused to do dialysis.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and I now look and I said, what a wonderful opportunity I had that I never used, because she knew she was dying. And people would come to visit her and she said, you know, I'm very sick and I'm dying. And I thought, you know, and then she asked me to really come and, you know, hear a confession, and she would go, and, you know, and my brother, who felt the dying so terrible. I mean, and he arrived before, you know, she died. And it would have been wonderful, I'm just thinking, it would have been wonderful for him. You know, even because when we were planning the funeral, my mother was dying and we were planning the funeral. He couldn't express himself, and I thought, how wonderful that would have been to have a ritual. And at some point, even if he couldn't have spoken, they were so close, and it would have helped him.
Yeah.
You know,
is he still around?
Pardon?
Is he still around?
He's still around.
Mm-hmm. Maybe do it then.
Oh, 11 years later, I don't know. But I don't know.
Tell stories.
She was so ready for it.
Yeah.
Oh,
it would have been really healing for her. Yeah. Thank you, Al.
One of the things that she talks about in these chapters, I think is important, and it kind of goes along maybe with what Marilyn was saying, is that with the individual death of the person that's close to us, we don't realize the cosmic significance of it. You know, it's not really personal salvation as much as collective salvation, that the whole creation is waking up. And this whole idea that there's more happening than just with this one individual life, it's all part of a larger whole of creation waking up to its own divinity through each person dying and rising. So she talks about that, getting out of that narrow individual sense, this is just happening here. It is. But you have to balance that with the particular and the universal. Something really large is happening. And every she talked about in Isaiah, in the Valley of the Bones, when it wasn't on just it was on Israel collectively that was being resurrected. So it's not, there's something more going on in each person dying and rising.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's part of the conversation that we should also get into so we get out of the narrowness of it just being about one particular person.
Yeah, I do.
There's a ritual that all of us can put to use before the person dies. Father Joe, who is the pastor at St. Mark's, did an anointing of the sick of my wife when she had cancer before she died, and she was not Catholic. This is truly an ecumenical kind of a thing. We are all God's creatures, and it was the most powerful liturgical experience that I have ever had. And she came to my small community of faith, and there were about 8 or 10 people there, and he did the anointing of the sick, and each person in the room came up and put their hands on her head, and either said nothing or said something of significance, and there wasn't a dry eye in the room, but she was very moved by that, and it's a ritual of the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
So think about that when you've got somebody who's close to death. It doesn't have to be after they're dead.
A very powerful thing. And I wonder if maybe something like that, sometimes if it's something that we plan, if a person's in denial, might be a little easier to accept if it's a official. You know, somebody, a priest coming, maybe that would make it easier than having, and you could move on to the other.
Yeah. Using the internet today, our friend had a daughter who had a brain tumor, and there's a Caring Bridge website, and she had like 2,000 hits on it while she was recovering and during her surgery. And talk about the healing power of prayer and people, you know, this young girl. So there are those kinds of things that somebody gets sick to put them on there and then alert, you know, all your email lists, and then people can keep in contact saying they're praying and, you know, all of that. It's wonderful. And then you can update people that way too, so you don't have to call everybody that you know about what's happening after surgery or how the prognosis is, and it's beautiful. Carrie Bridge, I don't know the exact website, but maybe get it for next week.
Yeah, coming back.
I hate to be, I think that ritual is really important, but we have to remember who it is. And this happened to a friend of mine where she was part of the pagan tradition. And this whole group went over to her house. And it's like they were playing with her. And she was in a coma. She wasn't ready to go. But they were drumming, and they were doing this, and they were doing that. And we have to be careful to let the person go. And that is mentioned in her book, where she talks about, now remember, this person may not be able to go unless you let them go. That kind of thing she talked about. And so we thought, ritual's all well good, but hey.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Keith, have a question.
I just wanted to emphasize how important all the things you've talked about are, that the communication and the talking and the ritual, because I didn't realize this till several years afterwards. My first parish was an old downtown parish that took all the paupers from the county hospital and the prisons. And I used to have most of their funerals, but I got so hard and almost cynical about it. Yeah. You know, I was the only one there, but the youngest undertaker, because he was a little guy in the totem pole, so he had, and rarely did they even have a driver. Mm-hmm. The guys, the grave diggers would come and carry the casket. Mm-hmm. And it dawned on me years later, you know, there were never, or very rarely, any women there. No relatives, nobody. Mm-hmm. Ooh, I got so cold and hard. And I just remember then being at some parishioners, going to see somebody's dying, and think, what's the big deal? You know? You're gone, that's it. Ooh, and how hard I got just from that experience. I didn't realize it till way later on. Mm-hmm. So boy, this ritual and talking, I think, are really important.
That's great, thanks, Steve. That's what changed you so that you...
The talking.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the old Priscille?
Yes.
That made a big change.
Yeah.
And the encounter groups.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, you don't hide from people. That doesn't solve anything. And that's what I was doing, I think, in this coldness and this distance. I was just hiding. Don't deal with it. Don't think about it. Right. Then it won't matter.
Right.
So it's important. Thank you.
Thanks.
Again, to thank you for a very heartfelt expression of your experience, and I think that I know it'll stay with me for quite a while, but I think that the talk about my mother died last year and my father is close to dying now, and I'm just organizations or groups like this that talk about the importance in your speech today to share with us, I think it's going to show how important it is to talk about it when we're still healthy, you know, young and healthy. And I know with my father, one thing I did was, he didn't really want to talk about death 10 years ago, and I just said, well, Dad, when I die, this is what, you know, I want. Mm-hmm. I want to be cremated, and at least it kind of opened up something to talk about, because I think he was surprised that mm-hmm. I was bringing it up, mm-hmm. you know, for me. And even now, and it's like the gal said, I have some of my family who are evangelical Christians, and I don't want any of that.
Yeah.
It's going to be like, you know, I said, if I'm in a coma, just give me 5 minutes. If I don't come out, pull the plug. You know, so it's interesting to think it's good.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Know
yeah.
How you can
heal. Yeah, Alice, and then I'm going to do a closing.
I was so taken with the way that you faced Chuck's body when he died. That sort of was my first introduction to you thinking about that. And then I heard somebody else after Chuck died that had done the same thing. And it's just a new awareness that came into my mind about the care of the body and the reverence for the body, the vehicle, and the spiritual mm-hmm. spirit and how they loved. And I, you know, when Susan Copeland was here, she read that passage from the book that woman wrote about doing that with her husband, accompanying her husband to the cremation to the very end. He had been in Romania, and their motto was set her on fire, whatever, you know, faithful always to the end. And she went in, and his body was, because of the way the accident happened, you know, was a nice way to look at, but she, I just got all choked up just in the reverence for the body. Mm-hmm. And I was reading that passage to my husband, she said, what you said, I choked up, this is beautiful. He said, don't do that to me. I think my husband reverences every part of the body of the life of the people that he loves while he's living. Mm-hmm. I think he knows every part of the people that he loves. And I think he watches the sacredness over that while he's alive. And mm-hmm. I think it's as important, if not more important,
to do that when people are there. And I think this, we're the body of God. We're the body of Christ. And I think God loves instantly in our lives. Every disparate part of the body, there's not a part of the body, every hair on the head is counted. God washes that love over us now. And that's how we become a co-creator, you know, when we have the care of the body now. Better to do it now than to wait until after death. But if you do it after death, it's a carryover of what you've done in your life. Then it's really a beautiful witness to reverence the
answer. You left your husband to say some words, didn't you?
Yeah.
Well, I did plan a guided meditation for the closing, when I was working at St. Mark's, I preached on a regular rotation, and one of the things that I did to prepare for that was something that I call Come Sit With Me, and you know, this is my own little invention that I would usually choose a saint, usually a woman saint, to kind of come and sit with me, to give me insights, to give me wisdom, to whatever it was that I thought I might be needing for that task, for that time. And usually with somebody like St. Catherine of Siena or Teresa Avila, you know, both doctors of the church, who, you know, I think Teresa Avila was wrote about the interior castle and the many rooms there are, and how we can move through these rooms on our spiritual journey. And Catherine of Siena talked about her intimacy with Jesus. So I used that as kind of a preparation time, and so I want to do a bit of that this morning, because I was convinced through that sort of prayer that I gleaned some insights and understanding. So I'm thinking maybe that would work for us in our meditation this morning. I'll use some of Kathleen's words in this, and some are my own. If you haven't done this before, it's fairly easy. It's just kind of calling you to relax yourself. And there's no right or wrong way, or just simply let yourself be moved by the experience. So if you're holding something in your lap, you may want to put that down on the floor. And you can sit with, put your feet on the floor and maybe palms up or palms down in your lap, whichever feels best. And close your eyes. And as you're doing that, become aware of your breathing. In chapter 1, Kathleen talks about the breath of God, which fills all creation. God the Spirit that infuses the universe with life is as intimate and close as our breath. Air is the breath of life, a symbol of a more mysterious reality. By awareness of our breathing, we come to the presence and to the presence of God. Breathing is a way of resting in the spirit, of making our breath one with the divine breath that sustains the universe. It is also a bodily form of prayer that links us with the universe. Breathe in the Spirit of God. Let it permeate your being, moving to every soul in your body, reviving the flame of life in you. Breathe in the Spirit of God. Let it fill you with gratitude. Let it flow out to all your sisters and brothers on the planet. And as this breathing relaxes you, let us take a mental journey to the beach of Santa Barbara, down by where the crosses are on a Sunday. And just imagine the many people milling around. Just notice them. And the setting is late afternoon. Sky is blue with beautiful white clouds billowing. And look at them. Marvel at their beauty. Just walk down the beach a bit to get away from the crowd. Down by the cliff. It's a bit deserted. No one's around at all. As you walk along, take in that salt air, smell it. Let it touch your senses. Feel the soft breeze touch your skin. Look at the sky and see the seagulls flying around, giving you a sense of freedom. As you walk along, you pause and look at the surf. Someone has conveniently left a chair. Take a seat. Feel calm as you sit down. The sun warms your shoulders. As you begin to catch the rhythm of the waves as they hit the shore, there's something peaceful in that rhythm. And you find your breathing pacing with the waves. Take in the wondrous beauty of nature surrounding you. Just sit for a moment. Through the study of imaging life after death, was there a person whose name kept coming up for you as you read the chapters or as people spoke the words of Kathleen Fisher? Maybe several names came up. Choose one that came up the most for you. Some would say to us that person has more to say to us, more to teach us. Would you like to invite that person to come and sit with you? If so, ask them to sit with you. What would you like to say to that person? Just take a moment for that. Probably more importantly, ask that person what they have to say to you. It'll take a little bit of time for you to listen to that. Time to come back to the quiet of the beach. Thank your visitor for coming and sitting with you, for sharing with you. And know that whenever you want to return to this spot or with this visitor, you can do that. You just have to take the time. When you're ready, open your eyes and become present to the group and to this moment. Many angels lead you into paradise. May the waters touch you, welcome you, and take you. Thank you.